Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking to Raven, the science maven, about elitism in science, about her journey of science communication and her dissertation actually on the subject, and how she became the world's most famous rapping scientist. I want to harmonize with you.
Okay, harmonize.
That was good. Was that actually it?
It was interesting that you went
down. Instead oh my of God. Well, some people say
harmonizing
at
the third is always easier.
Wait, so what did I do?
You went, now I forgot. That's where you went.
Which is, some people say, very interesting.
Right? Some people say the most interesting.
I'm Bjork.
Like, you could be. You definitely would feel confident enough to make Bjork decisions in a way that I never could.
Yeah, and then people, but the thing is that Bjork is a beautiful musician.
No, you just made a Bjork decision. You bought some tank top. That's way too short, but it's actually really cute and looks good.
I love how you saved yourself there. I was like, way too short, huh?
No, I just feel like it was funny when it arrived. It, like, where did you got it from? Some vintage, like,
yeah, I shop on Grailed, which is like, my oath to myself is I only shop secondhand. Here I am buying this shirt from Kuala Lumpur. It was shipped from Malaysia.
You're like, but it's secondhand.
I'm like, when I think about the carbon footprint of that, I'm like, I don't know if that's any better than what I need to do. I need to rethink what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's very short.
Well, when you opened it, I was like, I thought you were laughing because I thought you like accidentally got a child's shirt at first.
No, okay, that's so funny.
But it's not. When you put it on, I was like, okay, no, that isn't. But
I really like a short cropped shirt on the waist.
You love that.
And if not, know what I will
do. You love to show a little belly.
Okay, that is not what I'm saying. I'm saying I will tuck in thine shirt to pants to create the short crop look of a shirt. Or like the sweater I'm wearing right now, I will prefer the fit to be
tight.
So that even if it's short and tight on the belly.
Right.
To create a silhouette.
I like a shirt that has a good elastic like base, because you can kind of choose then, you know, like then you can have it come up a little higher or yes. you can like pull it down. But
exactly. I like to have the choice, but I also like this, for example, they've done all of it for me. And if I put my hands up, then you're almost getting my nipples out. It's
yeah. Like
short.
You can't even tuck it in, because if you lift your hands up, it's just going to come untucked.
And it's in very good condition. The person said only wore it twice. And I'm like, is it because it's not practical
like, it's too,
as a shirt?
Too short. No, I just gotta be confident. I think that's fun. I haven't got like a fun new piece of clothing in so long.
Well, that's totally fine. We're in a pandemic. The world is gray.
Did you want to
hit it?
Oh, what did we learn this week?
I couldn't tell if you were like, let's just be
I thought you might harmonize the note, and I bet you'd go up a third, not down a really interesting fourth or whatever I did.
Okay. Interesting, actually, about talking about music. My study this week is about music. So, Greg always has music in his ears. Like, it's actually sometimes disturbing to me. I'm like, you're going to lose your hearing.
I already have. Whenever we watch TV, I'm like, can you turn it up there?
Yeah, like, I'm like, my ears hurt. I was going to ask, when you study or work, do you listen? What kind, like, I know
always.
You do listen to music, but what kind of music do you listen to?
Okay, so I always have a working Spotify playlist. So currently I am in spring 2021. So every time the season shifts, I start building the playlist of that season so that in the future I can go back, listen to those songs and be teleported to that feeling of that.
So you're telling me though, like, do you listen to like pop music while you work, or music that's like contemporary?
It's contemporary music. And the thing is, because it's on that playlist, I have listened to it numerous times that it's not
it's kind of
a new
music
experience.
At that point.
Yeah. So when I listen to new music and like I'm studying or working, I consciously, that's when it has to be like
music that you've heard a million
point,
times.
Never, or oh. No, sorry, like no, not lyrics,
okay.
Not like
when
or
you
it's
really
like
need
moody,
to focus.
Moody, yes, and or I'll listen to these playlists because I've heard these songs a bunch, and so I don't, my brain isn't like. Whereas on like New Music Friday, I'd have to do like a very mundane, like maybe
certain
emails
tasks,
or
yeah.
something, and then I can actually be like, oh wait, this song's good.
Who chose emails? It's like you probably should be able to focus on emails.
That is a you issue, babe. You do not need to focus on an email.
Okay,
you don't.
Fine.
You know what I mean?
You don't do emails.
Especially mine. People are always like, what did you say? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're just like, yes!
Exclamation,
okay,
exclamation.
Bitch. Like literally, people are always like, we know when it's Greg writing these because we share an email. Because
he's listening to music and not paying
attention.
Okay,
my study is looking into the impact of background music on learning and studying and like if it's effective or not.
Oh my God, okay.
And that's why, because for me, I feel that I cannot have music in the background unless it's so background.
What does that mean?
Like very ambient, slow, not a single word in sight.
Spotify core.
Yeah. Or
YouTube
like
music.
For me, it's always often Zelda soundscapes.
Oh, symphony.
Yeah, it could be classical but if it's too good, like if I love it, I'm going to get distracted.
I love your eyes rolling back like this classical music.
Honestly, if it's a song I love, I will not. I could not listen to my favorite classical song and work at all.
I love that for you.
Okay, so previous researchers had like varying results, and there's three main theories. One is called like or effects. One is called the Mozart effect. You've probably heard about it, where it alleges that when you listen to specifically classical music, and they use Mozart as an example, it improves your cognitive ability. Most of the research on this is like quite weak. It was a big thing, but then everyone was like, this was never.
It
able
seems
to
like
be
elitist people in science.
Yeah.
And
like,
elitist people in classical music.
100%.
Being like, together we have the best.
Yeah. And they were like never able to replicate that.
Okay.
The second hypothesis is called arousal mood hypothesis, where they believe that music makes you feel good and as a result can impact your studying. Because,
yeah,
because like,
it makes
you,
you
feel
do
positive.
It longer.
Yeah.
Or
like it can motivate you or
yeah.
right to have something fun. And then the third one that's been studied is called seductive detail effect, which actually posits that it distracts your brain and it makes your studying worse. It's too seductive. You know what I mean?
I think that is like I'm like I know it's not helping, but it's making me like do it
right. Yeah, no, oh what,
it's
like,
so funny, it's a bit
the
of
last,
both
the yeah,
arousal helps me, it's like at least I'm doing something
right.
But I don't think it's
keeps
like
you stimulated. Okay, so this study was looking at those three and
okay.
testing them in like a group of people where they would test their cognition, their comprehension while doing various different music background stuff. basically, they did not find any correlation between listening to music and improving your learning. So there was nothing that stood out, like when they listened to this kind of music or this or in this way, it was like so much better.
Sorry, Mozart.
What they did find was that in relation to that seductive detail effect, when they were testing comprehension in people, people who had a lower working memory capacity, which is just your ability to hold information like in the moment, people who had a lower ability of that performed worse with background music.
Okay.
Which honestly even makes sense to me because I feel like you have a much stronger memory and a sense of like being able to hold on to detail. Like I could look at a map for 5 minutes and then as soon as the map is gone, be completely lost.
Oh, well, I absolutely freaking love you do a love map. But in other contexts, I can see that with you. I also, you know, the weed has absolutely obliterated my memory. So there's that. Without I weed,
like,
I would be
I always fun. Wonder, like, I feel like you can multitask things. And it's like, I guess this study and it kind of outlines how different people have different capacities for their working memory. And some people have a really large one. And that didn't mean they were better, but it was the people who had low ones who like, couldn't. It literally would ruin their ability to work.
And you're saying that is what you really
I could. Sometimes think, but I am able to listen to like soft background music, but there are certain tasks, even when I'm driving, I know this is a known phenomenon for people. People often like turn the music down when they're trying to park or like backing up because your brain is actually like, I want to focus. So if I have really focused work,
I love to blast music and then back the car into a pole.
Yeah, you've literally done that.
Exactly. I'm like, the music isn't going down. And if it sacrifices a bumper, the bumper's gone.
So I thought that was useful. Be smart about how you use music. Certainly most other things I had come across were like music can be distracting, especially if there are lyrics, if it's high energy, if it's chaotic, or if it's surprising. So they were like, experimental music can sometimes be unpredictable. Yeah. So your brain's like dealing with lots of random
that's
things.
So cool. I could see why you love that study. It kind of validates what you think. That's cool.
I guess, yeah.
So I learned this week about domesticated dogs. And so recently they found a fossil in Alaska that was 10,000 years old of Canis lupus familiaris, which is like a domesticated dog.
Of the time.
Yeah. Like
you said how old?
10,000 years.
Oh, wow.
And so what they realize from this and speculate quite strongly is that when humans came through, you just picture modern day Alaska being very close to Russia, came into the Americas, like when, mm-hmm. you know, how like right. indigenous
the land
people
bridge.
Yeah, came to the Americas long before the Europeans came mm-hmm. and obliterated it with colonization. And here we are in this really messed up world. But prior to that, when they came through that Alaskan bridge, they were coming with domesticated dogs. They are starting to realize through fossils. Yeah.
Which that's cool. Do you think that time, because that's like pretty northern and like obviously in the winter would have been so cold. Do you think they were like sled dogs? Like how we picture huskies?
Yeah. Well, they were from Siberian origin. So I picture that kind of cold energy.
Yeah. Oh, so cute.
Yeah. They used mitochondrial DNA to find that, like, and using the mitochondrial DNA, it's kind of a complicated process, but like with a bunch of other dog DNA, they were able to speculate that this specific dog was domesticated, essentially like branched off from a domesticated type of dog 17,000 years ago.
Okay.
So that's like 7,000 years, they speculate, of this dog being like, you know, around humans and then coming with humans to the Americas around 10,000 years ago. Isn't that cool?
That's crazy.
So it's a brand new fossil.
So humans truly have just had dogs as friends for so long.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's no way for them to know anything other than just finding a fossil there. Like, it's not like they knew what the dog was doing.
Right. But still, like, if it's so close to humans or being buried with human bones, or you know what I mean? Like, being able to find traces of that, that's so... I don't know why. I never really thought about exactly when humans started domesticating or working with dogs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something that they're always trying to figure out. This is just another clue. But it's just sort of wild when you think about... God, like, I love thinking about those time scales, like 10,000 years ago.
Okay, know what else is crazy, though? Crazy. Like, because you talked about bones and digging up bones and going, I was picturing, like, coming through Alaska, ending up in, like, Alberta or whatever. And spoiler alert, I'm working on an episode on dinosaurs, and it is so crazy to think about finding bones from millions of years ago.
Oh, my God, I know.
Hundreds of millions of years
ago. Hot takes for science communicators. No, we like dinosaur bones.
No. So I actually really want to bring kind of like a dinosaur expert on this podcast, because I realized while I'm researching the episode for ASAP Science I'm working on now, I don't know. I guess I've never really thought I was that into dinosaurs. And then I was just like so captivated. Like an idea captivated me. And then when I started doing research, I was like, wait,
yeah.
Why have I never it's freaked like out hole. More about like how crazy it is that somebody would have just stumbled upon like the largest creature that ever lived
and
on
been
Earth.
Like, there's no way this could
yeah,
be
fake.
It.
This is fake.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. And then it's like in Alberta, they're literally like, there's just like thousands.
Okay, get him on.
Right?
Okay. It's so interesting. And I'm like, I also want like to sit down with my therapist and be like, because I used to love dinosaurs. And then it's like almost like I rejected it like when I came out. Like it was like, do you know what I mean? Like it's like this so, weird, like
it's kind of bro-y.
It's like, well,
like.
I'm not going to do that because that was me like,
because there was never a gay dinosaur in Land Before Time.
Yeah, and that is exactly the reason. It's because there was not we were not seen represented in the dinosaurs.
100, except for like maybe Sarah the Triceratops, who was like a diva. She wasn't necessarily queer, but she like might have been a queer icon.
Yeah, I think she has queer energy.
I loved those movies.
I love how we're like trying to figure out how to like anthropomorphize their sexualities. But okay.
Of dinosaurs. I wonder if there were gay dinosaurs. There had to have been.
Are you kidding? There's gay everything, including plants. Okay. We are about to have the most amazing conversation. I'm so excited to talk to you, Raven.
We'll take
the break.
Yeah, take a little break and then let's chat. This episode is sponsored by Squarespace. Ooh, you know you want a good website. Squarespace empowers millions of dreamers, makers, and doers by providing them with the tools they need to bring their creative ideas to life. An all-in-one platform where you can build a website, claim a domain, market a brand, and even sell unlimited products online with no transaction fees, by the way. We actually have our own website with Squarespace and have for years, like 5, 6, 7 years maybe. So this is an authentico endorsement. It's so easy to use and customize. The look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. You actually can just sometimes use a template if you want and start to drag and drop stuff to make it look all pretty, but it's also optimized to look great on any device, so it works really well on mobile. When you create a website with Squarespace, you get free, unlimited hosting, top-of-the-line security, and dependable resources to help you succeed. Not to mention their 24/7 award-winning customer support. Yes, honey, award-winning. Just head to squarespace.com/sidenote for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SIDENOTE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Again, that's squarespace.com/sidenote.
Today's episode is sponsored by Audible. The Audible app, I'm sure you know about it. It's free, can be downloaded on your smartphones and tablets, and you can listen to audiobooks, podcasts. They now have theater events literally for your dang eardrums. I personally am obsessed with Audible. I'm currently reading The Ministry of the Future, and I'm also reading Fake Accounts for a book club. I must say the reason I love Audible is because I've gotten myself into these book clubs and trying to finish books. Like numerous books in a month is very hard, but when you do it while you're washing the dishes or working out or going on a walk, it helps you get through so many more books. I also have to recommend Claire Danes' Reading the Handmaid's Tale. That is still one of my favorite all-time audiobooks. Claire Danes actually makes the book better, and I was crying along with her voice. Visit audible.com/asapscience to sign up, and new members get 30 days free. As an Audible member, you get one free credit every month, which is amazing. I love these credits. They add up over time if you don't use them. That means you can go into the library and get whatever book you want, a bestseller, a new book, an old book, downloaded onto your phone to listen. And the titles are there in your library for the rest of time until you get rid of the app, which why would you want to do when you're getting books read to you by Claire Danes? Again, visit audible.com/asapscience. This is a way to help our show by signing up to support us here at Side Note. That's audible.com/asapscience. And, you know, get reading. Get those books into your dang brains.
Study time.
So today we are talking to Raven, the science maven, who is a science communicator, molecular biologist, a Fortune magazine's 40 under 40. You're working to make science more inclusive and real, and you're getting your PhD in science communication. So we are so excited to talk to you. Thank you for being on the pod, Raven.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. This is one of my favorite podcasts, so.
Oh, we blush.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm so excited to talk not only about science communication, like that is so cool that that's like what you study. And I feel like I didn't know growing up that that was an option or a thing. And now we sort of do that for our living as well. But I would love to be involved in the academic side of that. What brought you to that?
long story short, so I, okay, so my, most of my background's actually in molecular bio. I've got my bachelor's and master's degree in there, and I also worked as a corporate scientist. And then I realized that I'm not quite like a type A person, you know, and also corporate science right now is not super diverse. So
what is corporate science?
It's the type of work that I'm referring to is like contract research work at a CRO. Uh-huh. And so taking on big contracts from pharmaceutical companies and uh-huh. doing deliverables, like whether it's data or a protein or whatever.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. So I was doing super cool work. It looked different every month and it was actually very fun. However, I really wanted to be in a space where I could utilize more of my social skills. And I also, it just wasn't lost on me that I wasn't really bringing my work to the community that I was doing the work in. Like my job was overlooking a homeless shelter and I could see kids on the playground, like playing outside, having fun on my lunch break. And I'm like, I want to bring those kids in the lab. I want to show them like, hey, I just isolated DNA from all these bacteria. It smells like poop. Like, come, come check it out, guys. Couldn't do that, you know, for a lot of different reasons, mostly because of confidentiality and security. But I should still be able to share my science. And that responsibility wasn't really built into my role. In addition to me wanting to exist in a more diverse atmosphere, all of those things together, I just didn't really feel like I wanted to continue in that space. So I moved into education. And then as an educator, I was like, this is it. This is where it's at. Like, I loved it. And I ended up coming into a science education PhD program. But my research is not actually necessarily in science ed. It's actually in science communication, which are two separate fields. Like, I think a lot of people think they're the same thing. Yeah. There's a lot of overlap, but there's some distinct differences, too.
So the difference being science education, someone listening would think, oh, we're talking curriculum, like high school education. Whereas you, science communication, your PhD is like speaking to the masses, getting kids involved in science, but not necessarily through school. Like, what sort of ways are you picturing? Like, for us, we're obviously like, YouTube, Instagram, but it's like, is that even what you mean? Or like,
well, the real differences between science ed and science communication are just more so implicit versus explicit. So like in science ed, knowledge construction is like explicit. It's an explicit part of science education versus in science communication, it's like an implicit part of the process. You know, we're not necessarily always focused on knowledge construction, but it is definitely a factor in what we want and in the outcomes of our work. So it's just kind of like nuancy things that really occupy that blurred line between the two. And then obviously most of science education work is centered in K-12 and science communication is more so communicating science to the general public, if not just the scientific field, but for really everyone and not just school-aged children.
Yeah, like science communication, it's so funny because we now, like, you know, when we're at the border, we're like science communicators, you know, we never want to say YouTuber or anything because like, we're just like, ew, A, like,
well,
ew.
Also for a long time saying YouTuber, they'd be like,
what? Ew, no.
No, I know, I shouldn't say that, but science communicator, it has a, you know,
yeah,
je ne sais quoi.
More, like, legitimacy to that term somehow.
But at the same time, it's like, it feels like this term that we only realized started to exist almost as we were it. Like, is that true? Are there programs that you can go into science communication as a degree? Like, we always hear, like, smatterings that like it's big in Australia, but we're like, is that real?
Like, well, damn, okay. Like,
honestly, we've literally heard that from people. They're like, well, it's a thing in Australia, and we're like, okay, Australia, calm down. Okay, y'all are chilling. We don't want to hear from you right now.
Listen, no, it is, and that I'm on the same page with you guys. I didn't realize this was a field either. I definitely was like y'all and calling myself a YouTuber, and like, yeah, I make. make science videos on YouTube. I'm a YouTuber. And no, I've seen people who have master's degrees in science communication. And then there are like, yeah, there's, and then there's like programs like the Alan Alda Center for Science Communication that provides formal training to scientists on how to communicate their science. So it's like a growing field. I think in the research that I've done, it's said that the field's only about 50 years old, which, you know, in relation to all of science is really just the blink of an eye, honestly. So some of us are just still learning about it.
So I'm curious because your sort of the way you end up sort of doing science videos on YouTube, like you started doing beauty videos. Like you're, when I was going on your channel and looking, like you've done a diverse array of things specifically on YouTube. We also have to talk about your freaking music, which is so good and no big deal, but Megan Thee Stallion, you know, knows who you are. So like, I kind of want to start there. So you're speak a little bit about how you started on YouTube and like, is that how you almost figured out how to be a science communicator? Are they linked or are they separate?
Oh, it's definitely linked, but the path between the two is just like, what? So I started my YouTube channel really trying to fill a gap in the beauty community. The video, you guys can't see the video on the podcast, but I have sister locks, which are basically really tiny locks for your hair. Some people call them like mini dreadlocks, but they're really called sister locks. It's a patented technique that is actually used to give this hairstyle. And it's like a really niche community. So not a lot of people have this hairstyle. It's a big commitment. They're high maintenance at the beginning, but then as you go on and you're, you know, as you continue to have the locks, they just become super low maintenance. And it's just something you work hard for. So it's like a journey that you can document. And when I got these sister locks, nobody was really documenting the journey, and everybody was like, well, I want to know what it's like to have sister locks, but I don't have anything to watch. And so I'm like, well, let me just talk about my hair everyone. Like, let's just do that. And I really enjoyed doing it because I kind of veered away from traditional hair care methods. Like, I was doing stuff that a lot of people would never do with their hair, and I won't list all the things, but I think I really got a reputation as somebody who wasn't afraid to venture out beyond the bounds of whatever our little niche group had. And I think people really enjoyed that. And I started to make monthly videos. And I think that I had done that for about 3 years straight. And around the third year, I started working as a corporate scientist in the job that I described earlier.
Which we now know about. Right. Which we now know means big pharma and deliverables.
Yeah, deliverables. That's the favorite word. Hello. And I, even though my channel was about hair, a little bit of my personal life started creeping in. And I was talking about like how depressed I was actually in my job and how I really didn't feel like I was being included and I didn't have a space. And then I think the straw that broke the camel's back was I did a vlog one day, and I really had never done vlogs because at the time, you know, working as a scientist, you can't really bring your camera everywhere. It's just, you know, whatever. But one day I did, and it just so happened to be the day that like one of my supervisors was very disrespectful to me, and like they were so disrespectful that it sent me to the bathroom crying. And my vlog is literally me on the bathroom floor like crying in the grossest way. Okay.
Oh my god.
I have like toilet paper on my face. Like I'm trying to like wipe my tears with toilet paper. It's like that's like the worst paper you can use. Anyway,
just like gets like ripped off. And
yeah,
stuff,
it's just like, oh my god. You know. But I kept that in my vlog because I was tired. You know, I'd been putting up with so much crap for so long. I'm like, I'm keeping this in the vlog. You guys are gonna see what I'm dealing with here. And when I put it up, oh my goodness. People started coming out of nowhere saying, I'm experiencing the same thing every day. Like, I cry in the bathroom at my science job. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm so glad that you put this video up because I would have thought I was alone. Wow. And I'm like, wow. And that's when a light bulb went off in my head. I'm like, I gotta keep talking about this. You know, I have to start sharing. I have more to share, really, is what I started learning. And I didn't want to just talk about my negative experiences, but I really did want to show people that I not only love talking about hair, but I love talking about science, but also there's work that we have to do so that more people like me feel comfortable and feel like they have a space in science. And so I became a science communicator. And luckily, I didn't lose any subscribers. Everyone's like, okay, so we're doing this now? And I'm like, yeah, we're going to do this now. So buckle up. And then
how did you gain, or did you already naturally have the confidence and ability to kind of be that vulnerable on camera? Or had you done that before? Or what were you feeling like, oh my gosh, am I going to post this? Like, obviously a lot of emotions, but you know what I mean? Like, there's a big step to feel like I'm going to share this really vulnerable moment.
You know what? Whenever I approach a situation where I am hesitant about being real about something, I really have to do introspective work because I do get nervous. I get nervous every time I post a music video. I get nervous every time I make a spicy tweet. You know,
Your Twitter is amazing. I just have to say that. It's
a little spicy, you know. Might need a Tums. but I just have to think, why am I afraid? And usually the answer is because of society, and that society really does want you to just shut up when you're suffering. They want you to shut up when you have a different thought that might not resonate with every single person on the planet or be politically correct sometimes. People just want you to not say anything. And I'm like, I don't want to suffer in silence. People deserve to know that I'm hurting because my pain is valid. And I think that in sharing my lived experience, I can connect with other people and we can maybe come up with some solutions to move the culture forward.
Wow. That's amazing. That is why
that's
you are.
That's such a good perspective.
Yeah.
And it is so hard. I'm sure both of us struggle with that. Like, it's hard when you feel like, oh, I don't want to be a burden on other people, but also maybe I'm not sure about my own voice, or, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of questions that go through your head, even when it is something not emotional. Like, even releasing music, I feel that same way where it's like, I don't know, like, do I deserve to try and take up this much space and hope that people like the stuff that I'm or we're making?
Also, okay, we need to talk about science. Okay, is it not like, why is it so fucked up? Like, okay, like, it's like, do you know what I mean? Okay, like, because we can have this conversation because I feel like the people listening on this podcast we've talked about this enough because it's really challenging to explain to a wide audience because everyone pictures science. They think, oh, progressive people, you know, they're like, it's people who are, you know, saying wear a mask as if all of a sudden that means that they're also sort of on this other part of culture. When I'm like, we've been living through this. I'm like, never going to speak for you. I want you to speak openly about your own experiences. But it's like, I'm like, why does this feel like so much further behind than so many other aspects of culture in my life? Like, I do think there is something up with science, and I would love your opinion, or like, we can even just talk openly here. And, you know, there's people listening on the podcast. You can like chime in how they feel, but I'm starting to get like, every day I get more and more frustrated about how backwards things feel. Even when I was looking up science communication, it's like, oh, there's a governing body of science communication, apparently from like 2001, that's created by doctors and all these professionals that, like, I was reading in Nature magazine, this like think piece of someone being like, we need to stop having like doctors regulating like what nurses do. Like, there's always these like higher ups like regulating. They're kind of like, you know, it's really dangerous if we have just, you know, lots of different science communicators because they might get it wrong. And it's like, just chill the fuck out. Maybe we need more voices. Like, maybe we need, like, there's just this, like, energy of, well, there's this energy of homophobia, racism, misogyny, which we can talk about. But also this energy of, like, I don't know, this, like, elitist, like, I'm just curious, like, what sort of, like, if you can even speak, if, like, it's such a big topic, but how you sort of navigate that in your science communication and just in your life, because I think we just can't stop talking about it because it's just, it gets hidden in weird ways.
Yeah. As soon as you started talking about it, elitism came to mind, and then you said it, and I'm like, 100%. That's definitely at the core of what all of this is. I mean, and it's not just for science, but specifically for science, right? I mean, just think about just the ability to read. Like, for me, just thinking about being black people weren't allowed to read, right, up until a certain date that was fairly recent, you know, very recent in terms of the history of our country. Like, we weren't allowed to read. Like, so elitism, who's allowed into these spaces? Who's governed?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Governing these spaces, who's been given the privilege to even have the opportunity to get into this space, and then who's making the rules of being in the space? What kind of culture dominates in the space? And quite often it just the parts aren't representing like the whole, or I guess it's just it seems like there's a monoculture that continues to be pushed on everybody that doesn't represent all of us. Like, we're not all the same. And I think some people really kind of lose themselves a little bit trying to fit into science culture. And I love what you all are doing, because I feel like you all definitely challenge those norms that get pushed on us in this culture. You know, I love seeing you all dance and sing about science. It makes my day.
Thank you.
I love you though, too. That
also took a long, like, we didn't start that way.
Yeah.
We were a whiteboard channel and didn't show our faces and didn't show our, like, gay little asses for a reason, because it was like we were.
I mean, our asses have not been out bare.
No.
Yet.
It's coming.
And I would like to say that my ass, I've been working on it getting bigger, so it's not a little ass.
Okay, fine. Our big, gay, clothed asses. But, like, no, for a long time, I feel like, and now even as, like, I'm turning 33 in, like, a week, and I'm like, it is weird because I feel that I'm just starting to, and maybe this is a journey of life that everyone goes through. Like,
queer people have a different.
Yeah, like I'm having to really feel and understand who I am, and like realizing, like, even being in science has made me think I am a way and want to be a way or should be a way
or speak a way.
Yeah, and some of that might be real, but it's like now I have to navigate, like, who am I actually? Which parts of this science communication and science are genuine, and which parts am I putting on to perform what I think it's supposed to be?
I have a question. Do we think that, like, there's something about this truth, quote unquote, of science that, like, sometimes I realize it's hard to have conversations with people about racism, homophobia, misogyny in the sciences, because they're like, they go, well, that doesn't matter because we're looking for, like, the truth. Like, how do you navigate that? Because I feel like that's what we come up a lot against is, like, you know, these, let's just, like, this is generalizing, but, like, a, like, masculine sounding, like, a British straight white man who's very smart, who's like, well, but this is science, you know what I mean? Like, we're looking for the best, like, the science is going to speak for itself. Like, if we get into all these quote-unquote soft social science places, we're going to lose this, like, essence or something. Like, that to me has always bothered me. Do you think that's part of it, or am I just, like, mad about something that's, like, not real, or...
No, like... In terms of what you said, truth is subjective. Like, facts are different from truth. And a scientist's truth can not be factual. You know, I think I've heard someone say truth is a fact with an opinion or something.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting. Yeah, okay. Oh, my God. That's beautiful.
And when you look through history, you can kind of realize that, you know, like, people had facts, but they've always been interpreting them in ways to their own benefit or just to their own time. You know what
I mean?
But I'm curious, like, you know, you talked about having that moment on camera. Like, so what did that lead you to then? Like, in terms of how that transformed your, like, not only science communication, but like anything else you were doing online, like, where did that take you?
So I had a moment, and I'm trying to equate this moment to maybe something I've seen in television. I feel like there was a moment, I don't know if it was in Legally Blonde, where like she has this epiphany and she starts like ripping up papers and stuff. I can't remember it's like what movie. I am Elle Woods, by the way. But you know what? I just had this moment after I had time to reflect on my term as a corporate scientist and the things that I had endured and the things that I'd been told and the different ways that people were literally signaling to me that I didn't belong there. Quite, somebody actually told me that I was a token.
Oh my God. Fuck. Oh God, this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long story, kind of. But I was like, I'm done. I'm really done.
Good for you.
And I wanted to create content, really a masterpiece, honestly, in hindsight, of a visual representation of how much I did not care about what anybody thought and how much I wanted to shatter these boundaries that people had in science. So what that ended up looking like was a rap music video called Big Ol' Geeks. And in that music video, it's a play on Megan Thee Stallion's song Big Ol' Freak that had come out that year. And nobody knew who Meg Thee Stallion was at that time. So or it seemed like she would just started getting popular at that point. But I'm still her number one fan. Wow. But anyway, the video is like me in club wear with like three of my friends who are also in club wear, and we're doing scenes in a luxury car. We're in a laboratory. We're at a nightclub. We've got lab coats on. I'm like doing PCR in the video. But the lyrics, like the lyrics are super technical. I'm talking about science. All of this is about science. But if you listen closely, it's also about my narrative, like my personal narrative about being a scientist. And my best friend, who's an attorney, is also twerking in a leopard print two-piece outfit. So, and I put it out there. I was super, like, I don't think I've ever had so much anxiety in my life before putting out that music video. My husband now, he was like, Raven, you got to put this video out. And I'm like, are you just saying that? Like,
we love a supportive husband.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, is it because you have to say it or is it because it's actually
right? I'm like, are you just saying that? Because he's like, no, this is what people really need to see. And I'm like, all right, so if I can't ever get a job again in my life, you know, I know you got me, right? Like, you got me, right? And he was like, yeah, I got you. So I put the music video out. And this is actually the centerpiece of my dissertation, is studying the amazing responses of women, really people of all genders, all over the world, all different types of backgrounds, responding positively to that representation, and just expressing online just thousands of responses of saying, I've never seen anybody visibly so liberated in STEM. It was inspiring to them to see that, and that the messaging of the video resonated with them. Like, they felt like they were me, and in feeling like they were connecting with me so deeply, they were able to gain some sort of liberation for themselves. And all of that is incredibly powerful and really worthy of like studying scholarly. So that is a part of my dissertation.
Oh, that's so cool. Because it's so true. Like, even it's so interesting to even just hear it said like that. Like, feeling so liberated in STEM. It's like, it's so deep. It's
That's a really great way to describe it.
Yeah, because it's like, there is this weird...
like repression
when you're interested in science. It's like, if you're having too much fun, if you're too funny, all of a sudden your scientific brain is less valid. Like, it's really, really fascinating. I'm so happy that you're studying this, because it's also like, we're in the STEM field that if you actually just start explaining things that are quite obvious when you say them, but then, you know, that's when people go like, well, where's the study? And they're like, well, we got it coming from Raven the Science Maven, just wait. But it's like, that's such a good way of putting it. Like, you look so liberated and you're in STEM, and culturally it's like, we for some reason have cognitive dissonance around that. It's
like, I wanna say, crazy. Like, being, as I said before, my two degrees are in biology, but for my doctorate, I'm in a social science, studying science education and communication. I want to tell you, it was such a mind trip to make that transition, because one of the first things that we learn in a science ed program is how to connect our identities with science. And I want to tell you how difficult it was for me to grasp that as a scientist coming into that program. A lot of the people in that program are coming from like strict education backgrounds. And I'm true, like, true. I've been using my technical brain all this time. They're talking about our cultural identities, and like, I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, and how to connect yourself with your research, and like, including your, just in appreciating yourself as a part of science versus you just doing the science. Do you know what I mean? It was just,
yeah, exactly. Like, that's so that crazy. Must have felt so liberating. And I think that, like, now I'm going back to earlier, like, it's elitism. Like, I'm glad that you took that word and sort of like, because I feel like I haven't thought about it with that word, even though I've been trying for years to figure out, like, how do I describe it? I'm like, it's elitism. It's just like, it's this baked in elitism that's so cringy, because in every other field it's like you don't want to come off like that. Like, people even who are will pretend they're not, but in science it's like they're like, no, you have to keep that, because like, if you're so smart, then you're so smart, and you better like make sure everyone in the room knows that so that they listen and like validate your research or something. Like, it's just like, yeah, like we always can count when we meet someone who's like in our field and is also not an elite. Like, we're always like, oh my God, we like hold on to those people so deeply. You're like, I love them. And it's like, we know who they are. We talk about them. We're like, oh my God, we found a real one.
I have a funny story about that. So are you all are in Clubhouse, right? The audio app, the chat rooms.
We like just.
I have an Android, so I can't be.
Speaking of elitism, we're like, oh, we're actually only on Apple. Sorry, babe. You can't really get into this club.
Well, I got peer pressured into getting an iPhone, so I'm with that. So Clubhouse, it's an audio app. Sorry, I'm looking at the squirrel. It's like shaking on the tree.
Is it okay?
Spring's
coming.
No. It's just excited.
Oh, he's scratching himself. Sorry. Okay. Like, why are you vibrating that fast? It's weird. Are you going to explode? Anyways, wow, that's so typical ADHD, right? I just got distracted by a squirrel.
No, I love that, though. I'm like, it's taking everything in me to not just go full in on the squirrel. Like, so yeah. What's it doing? Tell me everything. What color is it? Because I love squirrels.
That's so typical. I do actually have ADHD, so I'm kind of like, dang. Anyway.
Got it.
So I use Clubhouse. It's an audio app, and you can go in these chat rooms, and it's voice only, no video, and talk about whatever you want. And there's topics for different rooms. And quite often during the pandemic, there is a COVID-19 centered room where people are either, and these rooms are either opened by people who have conspiracy theories around COVID and coronavirus and all of this stuff, or medical professionals and scientists who are chipping in information about the disease and everything that comes with it, the research and the vaccines and all of it. And so what happens sometimes is that the two types of rooms will combine, and you will find rooms where there are medical professionals, doctors, scientists, you know, everyone, nurses, everybody, and conspiracy theorists in the same room. Whoa. Trying to talk about the coronavirus.
Are they all speaking at the same time, or is there like people who get to have turn, like, or is there just like 100 people trying to talk at once?
Speaking of explosions, it's just like
So the culture on Clubhouse is people are normally really good about letting each other speak
and have turns.
Yeah, and have turns. So I did kind of like a little experiment where I just observed how the doctors and all the medical people were speaking and how the conspiracy theorists were reacting to the way that they were speaking about their science and the pandemic and giving out information. And so I opened up a different room, right? Because I took notes on what was happening, looking at the social interactions, opened up a different room, titled it something along the lines of, I'm a scientist, let's talk about COVID-19. Mm. And people started flooding into the room like, we got another one. And but my approach was very different from the medical professionals in the other room, where, as you all were saying, the people in the other room were just like very uppity in the way that they were talking. It almost seemed like they were reading from a brochure. It seemed like they were like the information holders. I'm like making an imaginary crown on my head. And my room was like, y'all just come in the room, ask me your questions. I'll entertain your conspiracy theories. Cause you know what? I don't know what your story is. You might have a good reason to think that Bill Gates is microchipping us. Maybe Bill Gates did something to you personally. I don't know. I don't know you. Yeah. And I kind of came in there with that mentality. Cause people were way more receptive to it when I listened to them, one. And then the way that I gave the information, I let them question me. I kind of let them attack me a little bit because they have these preconceptions of who you are and like what you do. But what happened was I ended up, somebody asked me, well, why should I trust you? And I'm like, oh, I don't know why you should trust me, but let me tell you a little bit about myself. And I basically went into a monologue about my STEM journey, starting from when I was a 7-year-old, you know, and my love for science developing throughout the years and all of the failures and successes that I had had to have a scientific career. And I also emphasized that I also struggled a lot as a scientist, and I persevered through feeling left out. I persevered through failing at a lot of things and people disrespecting me as I was trying to do my science work. And my main concern as a scientist is to have people enjoy science and to teach science. And when I was working as a drug discovery researcher, where I was doing work like a lot of the COVID scientists are doing, my main goal was healing. Like as I was growing my cells in the lab and running my experiments, I was thinking about my community. I was thinking about healing my community and playing a role in that. And then the people in the room were like, holy shit. And the one guy said, I didn't realize that scientists were people.
Yeah.
And then like a light bulb went in his head. He was like, you know what? I might get the vaccine. I'm like, yeah, you might get the vaccine. Wow. Like, let's go.
That is so freaking interesting. And it's so linked because it's like, okay, if you think about your music videos, like we just have to talk about Wipe It Down. So freaking good. Like, just like, okay, so people are responding to you saying, I've never seen someone so liberated in STEM. That liberation in STEM is you showing people that that scientists are human. And it's like this weird elite energy thing that we were talking about and that brochure reading. It's like, you don't realize how damaging that actually is, because now you're realizing that's the reason they're not listening. It's because science has siphoned people like us to like be scared. Well, it's also because
scientists aren't listening themselves, right? Like you went in that room and were also willing to listen to them.
But I'm saying to empathize with those scientists, I'm like, it's because when you're thrust into this STEM world, there's like this pressure to lose yourself. That's true. What I mean? Yeah. It's like if they had
to be the science.
Like say that scientist in that other clubhouse had the opportunity, you know, to be themselves, to be like unabashedly open about their hobbies, their interests, to show their vulnerabilities, to show that maybe they don't know as much as they do. If not knowing was like more like accepted almost like within the STEM community, then that person would maybe then be a better communicator and we wouldn't have the issues that like with misinformation that we're all trying to solve. Like, I'm just like, there's this other, it's like what scientists think is getting them into a better place is actually like what's hurting them. It's like, we can't have this monolithic, nerdy male voice be all we hear. Like, it's so damaging. But for some reason, we're conditioned to think that's the only voice that can give us valid science information or something.
I prefer to do it in a rap music video.
Wait, where did you learn? Like,
good at rapping.
Do you, like, did you grow up, like, making music? Or, like, how did that happen? Like, did you just one day go, like, I'm going to make a rap album?
You know what? It's something that I've done on and off. Like, I used to make beats in high school. I used to rap in high school. I actually almost got suspended one time because I made a diss track against somebody.
Oh, my God. I love that.
They were bullying me. I don't know why they were bullying me, because I'm, like, so nice to people and everything. Like,
okay. Then how am I going to get them a diss track?
I'm like, so nice. And then you made a diss track. Interesting.
Well, because they were trying to fist fight me behind the school. And I'm like, no, but I am going to make this rap song about you and like put it on MySpace. Like, that I will do that. So, yeah.
Battle with words.
So you just, yeah, since then, so you like went for your songs, like you make the beats and stuff as well?
Yeah, for most of them, if they're not like kind of like a parody on other songs.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then when did you decide it would be, what was your first science rap? Was it?
It was Big Old Geeks.
Yeah. That was the first one ever. Wow.
That was the first one.
So you went full in. You were like, okay, if I'm doing this, I'm doing this.
I told you, like, it was a light bulb and I just wanted to burn the whole thing down. I don't want to say I was angry when I made that song, but I was just done. I was so over science culture. I just wanted to burn it to the ground. So that's what that video is about. But then I did wipe it down after that.
Yeah, because I was going to say, well, you're in the process. You're doing everything you set out to do. Like, it's so, like, I know that we just touched on your Twitter, like, quickly, but that is really where you have found a really strong voice. Like, your tweets are amazing. I think it's interesting to know the backstory of you being, like, you sometimes get a little nervous or whatever because you speak truth, but that's why your Twitter is so viral and good, because it's, like, every time I read a tweet from you, I'm just like, oh, my God, thank you for saying, like, what I couldn't even really articulate myself. Like, so for that, is that the process when you're communicating science on Twitter? It's like you're really just honing in on what you're feeling and then doing the work to not be afraid to say it.
Yeah, I think, you know, on Twitter, my main goal is to build community around science. You'll notice that even though I call myself a science communicator, a lot of the work that I do is building community in science as a science communicator. Being a public-facing scientist that is real, you know, and kind of breaking down those perceptions of what a scientist is and what a scientist looks like. I often amplify other people's science communication because I know other people are doing, you know, really amazing fact-based reporting. Shout out to Science Sam, by the way.
I love Science Sam.
One of my favorites. you know, people like the Space Gal. There's so many to name. I know people are gonna be mad because like, why did you say me? There's so many. But as a community of science communicators, when we uplift each other's work, it's amazing what we can do. You know, like I mainly work on helping people understand their identities and tying their identities in with science and understanding science.
That's so freaking cool.
That is amazing. So with your, as you come near the end of your dissertation and PhD, like, what do you think life holds after that for you?
Yeah,
like,
what's coming up for you? What can you
not
say?
Not that you need to have an answer, because also I'm like, I don't know what the hell I want to do with my life, so yeah. I'm not expecting, like, I hate that
do
question.
Not ask
but
us.
You're not allowed to ask us back.
It's so hard. Like, I truly, my entire life, have been carving out my own path for myself that at this point I've learned to not have any expectations about what the future holds. But I can say that I have a strong desire to teach science formally, like at a university. What university? I don't know, because academia needs to get its act together. But I also would love to be an education consultant and teach science education strategies and pedagogy to people in higher education, because we obviously have a lot of work to do there. Continuing to make science music. I'm working on some media opportunities, like on television and digital. Just really continuing to fill in the gaps and spaces where I'm needed, honestly. So if anybody has any opportunities, hit me up.
For real. It's like, can we make music together ever?
Yeah, 100%. Like,
especially as the world comes back to normal, I'm like, I just want to, like, make music with people. And I don't really, not that I don't have friends who make music, but I don't, there's not a lot of people in the science world that like making music.
And you're both so talented. You guys need to make a song.
I would love to, honestly, if you're ever down, like, I would absolutely love to do that.
I have so many ideas for music videos. Like, I'm just, I just need somebody to say go, like with a budget.
Oh my gosh. I'll be the momager of you too. I'll be like, come on, come on, kids, make the beat. I can make this happen.
Yay.
Oh yeah. I know. What a weird world though, in a life and job to be like in science communication. Do you find that sometimes, like, I feel like we kind of found ourselves here?
Yeah, do your friends like know what you do? Like, we kind of just like hang out with people and let them, like, if you say science communicator to people on the street, their eyes glaze over. It's like, do people get it?
I think it's funny to listen to my friends describe what I do to other people, because like we'll be at a dinner and they'll be like, oh yeah, my friend Raven, you know, she's like the freaking Nicki Minaj of fucking Bill Nye. I'm like, what are you saying? I'm like, what are you that saying? And then they'll like pull up my YouTube videos, like my music videos on the phone, and make people watch them. I'm like, please stop.
Yeah, right here. Oh, that's the worst.
I know. I'm like, the Nicki Minaj of Bill Nye's is
the
how.
Nicki Minaj of
but
Bill
it Nye. Works in a way.
I mean, yeah, it does help describe at least a part of what you do.
People say about us, they're just like, you're the gay Bill Nye.
Oh my God, who does like, that?
So many people say that.
Why does Bill Nye have to be the standard for all of this?
Exactly.
Because he's like one of the only famous science communicators. Like there are others, but it is weird
that you're right. As we push what we're working on, it will no longer be that.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting about Bill Nye is that like he's obviously like very quirky and interesting, but he is like a very unique human being. And, mm-hmm. and I think going to your point of like being yourself, and like I'm sure like he obviously still fits the mold much
yeah
more
he's like
than,
a white
like,
man who is
but
like
I mean
a
like as a person it's interesting that he is eccentric and he is like he seems authentic, he seems like he's himself and that he's not trying hard, and he doesn't have like he doesn't have a PhD in like science, I don't think, like, and that's no shade, I'm just saying like you don't like people could have looked down on him for a long time, I'm sure he had to face that. It's just nice to be like, it's interesting that one of the main examples of science communicators we're thinking of at least has like some eccentricity, and maybe that's what made people connect with him so strongly.
Yeah, he's really dope. Like, I love that he's not afraid to speak out on his mm-hmm. values and connect his values to science. That's something that I love doing as well. Mm-hmm. But I also think that like the public generally shouldn't hold us up to the same expectations. Like one time I think someone was trying to tone police me and saying, they were like, well, Neil Tyson wouldn't say that. I'm like, well, I'm not Neil Tyson.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, totally.
I'm
it
not.
Shows you that there's so much opportunity in our field because it's actually so narrow. And that you notice that when all people can really call on is Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye. These people who've been doing it forever, who are in a completely different world than us, that it's like that they're still being called on is a sign of, I think, such an opportunity for all of us. Is the best way to look at it, and then also brings up a lot of the challenges, because it's true, it's like we got compared to Bill Nye all the time, which is like insane because I have nothing in common really with Bill Nye, honestly.
it's fine. I'm sure, I mean, people say these things, I think, I mean, aside from the tone policing that I just described, I think that people comparing us to Bill Nye is a favorable thing.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Like at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, okay, fine. Like the two of the most famous science communicators like the world has ever known.
Exactly.
Like, if that's who you want to compare me to, and then I can just take that and turn it into my version of
at least give me like Miss Frizzle or something.
Oh yeah. Right? I love that. Love Miss Frizzle.
Imagine Miss Frizzle never would have said that.
Fashion
Miss Frizzle
icon.
Would have said that. Miss Frizzle is a freak. And like I can only imagine what Miss Frizzle said when wasn't on the camera. You know what I mean? Miss Frizzle was into crazy
shit. Yeah, she was. She was radical.
Yeah, Miss Frizzle was definitely poly, pansexual for sure. Not that that's freaky or anything. I'm just saying, she was alternative queen.
I want to know the thought process behind Miss Frizzle's sexual identity.
I'm just like, you know what I mean? I'm like, when I think of Miss Frizzle, I'm like, that is an alternative queen. That is someone who like, the cameras were rolling. They're like, you're on a kid show, and she did everything she needed to do. I'm just saying.
The cartoon camera.
But
even on the show, she was like progressive. Yeah. She was like, you know, they were doing stuff.
She was doing
that
butt
other
stuff.
Teachers wouldn't have done. Yeah.
They went in the butt. No problem up the butt. She was like, if you're questioning even being in the butt, why are you questioning thinking about being in the butt? That's all I have to say.
I love it.
Miss Frizzle, a queer icon.
A fashion icon.
Fashion icon. So thank you so much. Where can people find you? Is it Raven Science Maven everywhere, or how does it work?
So I'm Raven the Science Maven on Instagram and on YouTube. I am on TikTok at Science Maven and on Twitter at Raven Sci Maven. Yeah, I did not think this through when I started.
those all relate. We will like link to everything in all of the socials that we post of you. We're obsessed with you. We are gonna definitely work together, whether it's on a song first or in other capacities. And once we're out of this mess, we're gonna hang out.
Yeah, you guys are. I don't know. Are you guys are in Canada?
We are. Yes.
I'm like right. I'm almost in Canada. I can see Canada right there.
Wait,
literally.
Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Buffalo.
Oh my God! We're literally like gonna hang out sooner than people think.
Yeah,
open that border.
You'll probably get the vaccine before us.
That is so cool.
I signed up for my vaccine appointment yesterday.
Oh my gosh! Congrats.
We're gonna be swimming to Buffalo soon to get it. I'm American.
Good luck swimming over here, because it's like you're gonna go over Niagara Falls.
They're like,
you're like, it's worth it.
Science communicator dies in Niagara Falls, not realizing how streams and rivers and lakes work.
I freaking love it. Oh, I wanted to shout out Smarty Pants, my clothing line.
Ooh. Yes.
So I started a clothing line. It's called Smarty Pants. And it really aligns with my goals as a science communicator, because I want to continue disturbing the image of a scientist and what that popular image is in America, by providing clothes that are science related, but kind of go against the grain of what we normally talk about. Like this shirt I have on, it says girls just want to have funding for.
Oh, that's so,
that's so good.
That's
so
cute.
Oh my God.
So stuff like that, you know, I have a lot of feminist things in my store, a lot of things with rhinestones on it. Just there's something for everyone, honestly. So that's Smarty.
Do people
Pants.
Just go to like smartypants.com kind of thing, or where would they find it?
Well, you want to go to smartypants.store, and that will get you to my shop.
All right, okay, cool. We'll also post about that as well.
And I want to know, okay, wait, when you like have a dissertation and finally like, are people able to see that ever? Like,
ew.
Are
we
able
to? Yes.
Like, is there a way? Like, I'm so curious to like see and read about
it. We want
to
read it.
Yeah, you will. So I have to upload it to my school's website, and then it'll be available shortly after I graduate. But please don't, don't read it.
No, I want to. I'm so curious.
Don't read it.
Buy the clothes and then read it. Like, you're obviously pushing the clothes before the dissertation. That's so funny.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.